Money is Podcast. This is Andrew. This is a episode we shot with Josh Belk, who's actually my CPA, an extremely high-level CPA. Does a little bit of what's called fractional CFO work. Really cool concept. If you need any questions on taxes, I'm telling you, this is the guy. He does some very complex tax structure for us. This is Just Business with Josh Belk on how to structure taxes here on Money Is Podcast. Hope it brings you guys some values. Check it out. Hey guys, how are you? This is Drew. This is Josh here, and we're in beautiful downtown Chicago. Behind us is the skyline. Matter of fact, over here to the far, be your left, I think, is Willis Towers, which, did you see the glass cracked yesterday? Like 2 days ago, the very high glass that you walk out on cracked, and we're here going to shoot a podcast on Just Business with Josh Belk, with Belk and Associates. Check this podcast out. Talk about your start here for a second. You born in Indiana, mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes.
Born in Indiana. You graduate high school and end up going to Purdue University.
Correct.
Right? So you're a Boilermaker.
Yes,
I think I've seen your post through and
yes.
through.
Yeah.
You were very excited. What was it? In the March Madness this
yes.
year? Was it March Madness this year? How far did you guys go this year?
It went all the way to the Elite Eight.
Elite Eight,
yeah,
you guys made it.
And yeah.
And it was a crazy game that you lost on, wasn't it? Because I texted you that night and said, uh-huh. Oh my God, you must be, it wasn't like a double overtime?
Yeah, it ended up right. And so.
Versus Virginia?
It was, they hit a 3-point shot kind of right at the buzzer. It looked like we had the game won. I'm jumping up and down. You know, just going crazy, and then
I texted
a hundred other people just lit up my phone, and I'm almost in a fetal position.
Oh yeah, tears totally depressed.
In my house, yeah.
I'm an Alabama fan,
right?
And so same thing, man. When Alabama lost with Clemson this year, the texts are coming in, and a lot of them were like polite, like, "Hey man, you guys are awesome, whatever." I didn't want to hear anything.
Sure.
I didn't want to hear your congratulations for making it this far.
Uh-huh.
It's that mad. It's amazing how much emotions we'll get. And I'm not even from Alabama. You're actually from Purdue. I mean, that is your alma mater.
Yeah.
And I can imagine the emotions. And you guys made it far, man, all the way to Elite Eight. Give me a little background here. Has Purdue ever won Final Four?
They actually won the national championship in 1932, but it was long before the
tournament
and all this other stuff. Yeah.
Okay, so they won in 1932.
Yeah.
And you guys are still holding on to that one.
All we have to hold on to. So, the football may, it probably will never happen. But
it seems like, to me, I'm more of a football fan. It seems like Purdue is growing.
They're doing better.
Their football. At one point, they were like Vanderbilt. They were just like why did we even have a football team?
When I was in college, I mean, we were winning 2-3 games a year. It was absolutely brutal. The football stadium was awful. It was horrendous.
But I see some improvement there.
Yeah, it's gotten better. And in my grad school years, Drew Brees.
Matter of fact, you guys know, don't underplay this, because you guys just beat Ohio State. That was a crazy game that Purdue beats Ohio State. I think it was in Purdue.
Yeah, blew them out.
And it had that crazy story of the young kid that had, cancer.
Right.
That was there. And that was just this past season.
Right.
Wasn't
it? He ended up passing away.
Thereafter, maybe a couple months later, he passed away. And I remember I watched that whole game live and thought, holy, this might be one of the first times ever Purdue, because obviously Ohio State and the Big Ten is the powerhouse, right? And Purdue beats Ohio State at Purdue. It was a crazy game, man. Okay, sorry about sports. Now, you go to Purdue, you graduate with an accounting CPA degree, right? I've known you for years, and have always sort of looked for in the past, I looked at you as my CPA, and that's what you did for me. But your business completely, you've done almost, I don't want to say a 180, but you've made a lot of changes in your business and went from just basically an accounting firm into really what I use you now for. I use you for the consulting, for the accounting side, but you do a lot of the consulting, the business development, even what they now call fractional CFO work as well, right? in your business model, just for clarity for the viewers, would you say you're going, your business model is really more focused to, into the consulting world right now?
Yeah, so we're really kind of almost dual focused,
okay.
If that's truly possible.
Okay,
but,
sure.
So the way that we're kind of moving, the direction we're going is I really have my team that's kind of focused more on the day-to-day of the kind of the traditional CPA firm type work.
Right.
So they're going to handle whether, you know, with a client that's needing help more on the day-to-day, maybe training with, you know, with somebody with bookkeeping staff to the compliance side of, you know, tax and all that goes in with it, audit, that type of work. Where the dynamics of the firm has really changed as far as the seat that I sit in. So I've moved away from kind of being involved a lot in the day-to-day, where I've handed that off and really trying to work on training my team. Into making sure that they're adequate, they have the level of knowledge to be able to continue to deliver the quality product that we're wanting to deliver to our client, bring that value there. But moving beyond that to what a lot of accounting firms are not doing, because most of the time accountants were very historical looking, so we're kind of looking backwards.
Always looking backwards.
Right. And so what I think what brings the most value to a client, to a potential client, is going to be to have that dialogue of strategy, kind of understanding where are you wanting to go. And then how are we gonna help you get there?
Okay, so let's talk about all the business side of stuff. Now you travel the whole nation. I see you all the time.
Yeah.
And you're not based, you're based out of Chicago, but you really travel everywhere to work with clients.
Right. So our footprint at this point is almost national.
Yeah, because I've seen you all the way down to Miami doing stuff. I've seen you all the way to Seattle doing stuff out there. So, and I'm assuming everywhere in between as well. Let's talk about a little more about the consulting side. Obviously this sort of show here is called about just business side of stuff. With your experience of working with these different companies and corporations, if you were talking to an entrepreneur today, let's say, I'm gonna do this two different ways. I wanna get your advice from an entrepreneur starting off from sort of ground one, knowing what you know now and the people that you work with, what are some things that you could tell them to help start their business off when they can't afford all the different CFOs and even a full-time bookkeeper, and then from there, I'm gonna go into, okay, now you have a corporation that's making some money. It's hitting all the gross profits. It's in the black or green, whatever you're gonna call it, and it's making money. What are some things that you see around as you work in different companies that you could tell that person to also help grow their business or stuff that they could watch out for through the process? Let's start on the beginner level. Someone's watching right now. They're either already in business, small business, right? They're, by small business, I should say they're self-employed, right? Maybe they're, I've been thinking of my guys that they're starting a camera business or a photography business, right? They're starting a videography. They're starting a maybe for weddings or something, or they started a print shop and they're printing stuff, whatever it is. What are some advice from all your consultants you've seen that you could help that person out with? What are some things that he could watch out for?
Okay. So when we initially, in just this last week, for example, I met a young lady in a coffee shop wanting to start up a photography business.
Oh, okay, good, great.
And so, so how did that conversation go, right?
Yeah.
All the way.
Take us there to that conversation.
Yeah. So the conversation is beyond, okay, what are you going to do? Because everybody has a skill set that they feel that maybe they could take and build a business out of, right?
Okay.
So before we ever kind of get to that point, the first question I'm going to ask them is, why are you doing this and where are you wanting to take this?
So big picture.
Right.
So you're sitting down with them saying, hey, 5 years from now, I don't know how far out you go, making this up, 5 years from now or 10 years from now, where do you want to be?
Right.
Is that what you're asking?
So I'm gonna kind of ask them, because I know at this point, they don't have a strategic plan together. They don't have a vision plan together. They may not even have a mission statement.
Right.
Okay. So they're just kind of like, hey, I have this idea. I have kind of this hobby, and I want to do
good
something
idea.
With it.
Yep.
Okay. So I really want to kind of, before I really can help them, I need to know where they're wanting to go.
Okay.
So if they're saying, okay, you know, I'm starting this business just simply to try to help pay my bills,
right?
That's a lot different than if they have more of a grander vision.
Okay.
So maybe they're, you know, eventually want to take this thing and maybe start a nonprofit. You know, this last year we had a client, you know, they kind of had one of their top items on their bucket list is they wanted to buy a Ferrari.
Okay.
Okay. That's a much different conversation than somebody who says they want to dump, you know, $1 million into trying to fund some sort of foreign mission work, for example.
Right.
Complete different conversations. So
just to clarify, not one is right or wrong.
No,
it's just different.
It's just different.
There's nothing wrong with owning a Ferrari, and there's nothing wrong with we're feeding 1 million kids this year in Honduras.
Sure, awesome.
But on the same hand, I also have really nice cars.
Sure.
It's not, and I think sometimes people,
it's not either or.
Especially when they look at it from, if you go up, this is when I always talk about money. And it says, especially when I see people that grew up in middle class, lower middle class families, we're always sort of taught that money is bad. That wording is not used, but it's insinuated. Mm-hmm. Like wealthy people are greedy, money doesn't grow on trees. And we're sort of indoctrinated with certain philosophies of money. When you're poor, poor family, there's certain things that you kind of grow up with, right? And I think sometimes, even as I meet with people across the nation teaching them about the topic of money, there's almost some guilt in someone saying, well, I really just want to own a Ferrari and have a 15,000 square foot house. Right, there's almost like a little bit of inner guilt that people deal with through the process. And I think my point there, as you talk it, is, dude, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
There's nothing wrong with someone saying, I'm gonna start this business, and my end goal is to own a Ferrari. Dude, great. But either way, you have to know what the end objective is.
Yes.
I think the mistake that people make is they don't know where they're headed with the whole thing.
That is correct.
With their business model, right? And that's where you're trying to get that person to is, where the heck are you headed with this thing, mm-hmm. right? So, okay, so you have this person, you try to narrow down what's their end goal through this process.
Right.
And like you said, it's not necessarily either or, it could be both, man. Mm-hmm. Well, you could do either one, this one, or both combined, right? Okay,
right.
So you sit down with this person at the coffee shop that you did just recently, you try to get them to paint the picture of where they're headed with it. All right, now what?
Okay, and then from there, we can begin to work through the process, everything from the foundation of how is this business going to be structured.
You back it from there?
That is correct.
Back into it?
Yes.
Okay.
So then from there, we say, okay, this is where you want to be in 5 years, this is where you picture yourself being in 10 years. And then really start to get a heartbeat of where are you at now?
Okay.
So is this thing, are you starting this thing from ground zero? I have zero customers, I just have this idea. Or as a hobby, I'm kind of, I have my 9 to 5 and I'm doing this from 5 to 9 or whatever.
Right.
Okay. And so we say, okay, well, that's great. So where do you picture your process as far as getting more clients?
Okay.
As far as exposure.
Scalability.
Right. So in this next, for example, I'll say in the next 60 to 90 days, what are you planning on doing? This next year, what are you planning on doing? And then, so what I'm listening for many times is, are they looking for people to help them? Meaning to say, okay, well, I'm thinking about partnering with my spouse, or I'm thinking about, I have this friend who kind of helps, that maybe they're gonna want a piece of the business. Because all that's gonna come into determining from a foundational end how we wanna structure this business.
The blueprint.
Exactly.
So the blueprint.
So we're taking a look at, okay, what type of entity is ideal? Then not only what are they doing now, but as far as that, when they begin to scale this business, and hopefully they do, because we do understand that most businesses fail, 80-90% of businesses fail in the first 3 to 5 years.
Right.
Understanding that person I'm having, that conversation I'm having with at the coffee shop, and if statistics will tell me 3 years from now, they're gonna be back doing what they did before, because that's what they know how to do, and for a variety of reasons. Maybe they find out they truly don't like it. They don't. That's not a passion.
Or it was just a hobby.
It was truly just a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Or they
struggle running the business. They struggle actually
right.
growing it and doing it, right?
Right. And so we're listening for a lot of clues and to try to help them as far as, okay, well, how do we want to structure this thing? And then from there, we'll start into the conversation of strategy.
Let me back up. And when you say structure, for clarity, what you're referring to is, are you referring to structure as whether they do a C corp, S corp, FLPs, LLPs?
Correct.
That's when you're sort of, with the data they're providing for you there, you're coming back saying, okay, with where you're at, what you're telling me that you want to go do, you should structure it as this, right? The entity itself and the tax structure of the entity. Is that what you're getting into right
there? Right, because there are two huge components to it.
Right.
Okay, and many times when a business is a startup, they'll do one of three things.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, they'll say, okay, I need an LLC because
they heard it somewhere. That's all that happens.
And so they'll go online and they either try to do it themselves or they'll contact, one of these companies out there. I don't want to mention names.
So I'll drop
which it. Is, yeah, which is, they kind of just create this boilerplate that basically doesn't do anything for them. They have no idea what they're doing, but I need an LLC, so I'm going to go and do this.
Right.
So we will see that, or they'll contact their attorney.
Okay.
So they'll call their attorney, who most of the time they don't know anything about tax. So yes. Their attorney will set up an LLC. They'll charge them, $800, $1,200, whatever, to set up this LLC. Or they'll call their accountant and say, hey, I need an LLC. And the accountant has no idea of the asset protection
side. The asset side of it, yes.
Okay. So what we're really trying to do is to try to, first of all, we're saying you and you shouldn't be doing this stuff yourself.
Right.
Okay, not unless you have the experience.
So many people do that.
Yeah.
And I think it's the biggest mistake, because they, in the classes I always talk to them and say, you, when you, from asset protection side, when you open that corporation up, you open it up from where you are right now, sitting in this room, mm-hmm. and you said, oh, I need a corporation. And they go to the website, start looking it up. And I said, and I always tell them, asset protection would be, you would be setting that thing up as though you were sitting in the courtroom on the stand, and the judge and the juror are there, and what you have is there to protect you. But no one ever thinks about setting up a corporation from that standpoint. They always set it up with thinking, well, I gotta go open up, and so let me go over here and do it right now. Which, at the end of the day, normally has zero value if they end up over here.
Right.
Which is not really asset protection.
No, right? No, because many times it's not even worth the paper.
It's not, as I always tell people, it's not even worth the paper it's printed on.
Right.
It literally has no value to you, but you spent $480 for it on some website, and now it's like almost like it appeases them and says, well, I have a corporation. Mm-hmm. Because they heard somewhere that they have a corporation. They gotta have a corporation to do it. And it's mm-hmm. all set up backwards and wrong. I think what you're talking about is so irrelevant. And I knew one time I have an asset protection attorney. It is all my asset mm-hmm. protection. And I knew he was good when any type there's a tax, anything, he refuses to answer it and says, I'm only asset protection. You have to go talk to your CPA
right.
and to combine these two together right there. They mm-hmm. don't pretend like that he was both. You know what I mean?
Right.
He knew his field and stayed right in it. And one time I was working with you on the CPA side of stuff, and I went to you and said, I don't know if you remember tonight, I said, my asset protection attorney wants you to spell this out in his words as though he was 9 years old. Because he said, I know nothing about tax structure, mm-hmm. right? All he knows was the asset protection side of stuff. And I just think so many people in business missed the difference between those two right there, right? And they end up going to ABC company, setting it up. And for what they spend, they're not that far away from actually getting level one of what they need.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a huge gap difference, is it? Pay-wise is what I'm saying.
Right.
By the time they go and go to this ABC company online, pay all the random fees and filing stuff, and my point is they're not that far, and it's not a huge expense what I'm saying, but it's good once you get it. It's really good. Once you know you're in the right structure, it's a very good feeling.
Well, because when you own a business,
mm-hmm.
and knowing a little bit of your story, knowing a little bit of, you know, and you know a little bit of mine, mm-hmm. It's for most business owners, it's not if you're gonna get sued, it's when.
It's rapid fire. And yeah. The bigger you grow, it's always, it's the more you put yourself out there, right? It's the risk, right? And I always like everybody with asset, with any type of investing, risk versus reward. When I started this show right here, that means my risk was gonna go up because I put myself out there now, which means I gotta back up before I start this, and I had to go meet with my attorneys and say, okay, this is what I'm gonna go do. How do I make sure I'm structured the right way,
right?
Because in America, I read a stat somewhere, I don't know if it's true or not, but I read a stat that said, America makes up 6% of the population in the world,
mm-hmm.
and 94% of the lawsuits right. in the world, mm-hmm. right? It's a crazy world that we live inside. And most of them are frivolous, money-seeking type of lawsuits for the most mm-hmm. part. But what I always tell people is it doesn't matter. Once you're sued, if I get sued, why lose? It's only a matter of how bad I lose. Even if I win the case, I still lost.
Like you're spending money on legal fees, you know, the
headache,
the brain
the
drain,
stress, yeah, the right. energy that goes yeah. through it, right? The negativity, the bad energy that's mm-hmm. surrounding you, I gotta go to court and that you get that nervous, because we never go. And the first time I ever go to court, and it was like my stomach, I couldn't sleep the night before, which means if I'm focused on that stuff, I'm not focused on producing,
correct.
I should produce. All right, let me back up.
Sure.
Go back to where you were. You help now with structure, entity, tax side of it as well, because I think a lot of people get confused on corporation and tax structure and how the tax plays into their structure, if you will, or how the structure plays into their tax side of it. They get a little bit confused on those being one, but also two different things,
right?
And
also for the understanding to be there that once you set it up, it may change.
Yeah, and it can.
I mean, you think about, you know, yourself, how many times yep. you change
your
structure through the years?
I've called you and said, hey, should we consider doing this? Right. Or you'd call me and say, hey, new tax laws, you should consider doing this now. Mm-hmm. It changes.
Yeah, yep. So you need those people on your team Okay, because this isn't kind of one of those things that, you know, hey, I'm going to call this particular firm and they're going to do everything for me. No, it's when as a business grows, they're going to have more and more people at that table.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a scriptural principle, right? In a multitude of counselors, there is safety or security,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And so who need to be at that table? And so when people call us and say, you know what, I'm not going to be your attorney. Okay. You know, we can provide some, you know, we can help you contracts, we can help you set this up. But when you get to a certain level in your business, okay, you really need to make sure you have a good asset protection attorney. You need to make sure you have an attorney that understands contract really, really well, especially if you're getting into, if you're dealing with product liability, for example.
My God.
You know, if they want to open a coffee stand, you know, right. or, you know, a coffee shop, for example.
Slip and fall.
Yeah. You know, somebody gets burnt on, yeah. a, you know, on a coffee, you know, yeah. this type of thing. Make sure that, you know, that all of your contracts, everything is structured in a way. If they're wanting to open a franchise, all those bring different complications. So when I'm having that dialogue with a client, well, here's somebody you may want to call because mm-hmm. here's something in your business that I'm not necessarily able to help you with.
You see it, you understand it,
right?
But it's not your forte, it's not your strength.
Exactly.
It's not. I think a mistake that a lot of people make in small business, and you're saying don't do this, is they try to become what I call jack of all trades,
right?
Right? You have this one person that tries to do everything mm-hmm. inside of business. And when I study money with entrepreneurs that don't have it, what I refer to as contributors and entrepreneurs that do have money, one thing that I always notice, and maybe you could give some input here, is on the contributor side, those that are still struggling with money, to me it seems like they go very shallow and very wide with information. They know a little bit about a lot of stuff. And when I go on this side and find the creators, the ones that have money, I find they find what they do, whatever it is. There's tons of vehicles you could choose from. Whatever it is that they're good at, they master that thing right there. And they know we were just talking about a guy, I won't use his name, but we were just talking about a guy that we're both mutual friends that we both work with in our circle of influence,
sure.
that's what he does. He's figured out what he does and he stays right there. Even though he knows stuff over here, mm-hmm. he doesn't stray that direction. Do you see that a lot when you work with entrepreneurs that there's a lot of, and at some point I know they have to wear lots of different hats when you start off, but do you see that they try to overstep their boundaries, overstep their lines of trying to become the attorney and setting it up for themselves, trying to become the CPA and doing the tax work. Do you see that happening a lot when you consult with individuals?
Well, it used to be yes, but now, you know, kind of the quality of clientele that were coming to us, we don't see it as much.
Yeah.
But for, you know, kind of a lot of these startups,
yeah.
people that'll call, and maybe they're a friend or they're, you know, maybe they're the kid of a client or whatever the case may be. Or somebody I crossed paths with, maybe somebody I coached in wrestling years ago,
yeah,
or something,
sure.
right? That they may call and say, you know, hey Josh, can you kind of help me with this? And many times what ends up happening is that conversation is happening. You know, they've already done these. Well, I went and did these types.
I did this. Yeah.
And that's their mentality. Well, I saw that I can do this online. I watched a video and watched a YouTube video.
There's a famous one.
Exactly.
I saw YouTube. It's like YouTube is great if you're talking about how to set up your Wi-Fi, mm. how to set up your TV, how to build out your camera. It is not great for asset protection.
No.
It is not great for, well, I saw a YouTube video, so I'm doing all my taxes this mm-hmm. way.
Right.
It is not what YouTube is built for, but so many people that I come across is literally what they're using it for.
Sure.
Right? And I almost feel like it's they have this fear, talk about money, they have this fear of they don't want to spend money for this, whatever this is, right? They don't want to pay your fee for consulting or taxes. They don't want to pay the fee for it, and they try to go around what it is, which ends up in the long run always costing more money and more time through the process.
Every single time.
Every single time. But no matter how many, I'm sure I feel like I'm pounding my head against a wall saying this, you're not going to get out of paying for this. You can try to go around it and it may put a Band-Aid over the problem, but it doesn't fix the issue.
Right.
You're going to come back and have to go back and refix all this stuff.
Right? But what's going to happen is the next year, either they'll call us and say, hey, you know, I set this thing up and I didn't even know about it.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I started this new business, I went and did this myself. And then the way they structured it, it cost them,
yeah.
you know, tens if not hundreds of thousands of dollars more in taxes because they didn't want to pay me.
And look, I'm, you know, I'm not
600, 700, 800, 1200, whatever it is, to help them with the, you know, on the front end process.
For the viewer side, just to be clear, I'm not saying that I haven't done it. When I started, I did the exact same thing.
We all did.
I'm just trying to now go back and say, hey, I'm telling you, that's for sure the wrong way. That's all I'm trying to say. And I did it. It's just the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And it always ended up costing me more. When I try to go around, when I try to go around asset protection, guess what? It cost me a lot of money. When if I just did it the right way up front, yes, it's gonna cost me money, and that's what burns, because you're paying for something that you don't know if you'll ever need or have to use or whatever, but when you needed it, you'll always love it.
There's also another kind of element to this. And I got burned on this here just recently. And I was actually on a phone call yesterday with my attorney.
Okay.
And my attorney knows me really, really well, and we're pretty good friends, and we send each other a lot of business. And he knows that I'm very trusting.
Okay. As a business owner.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to help somebody, you want to work with them, and you really kind of almost you have many like passions as they do as far as wanting to help people in different areas. So we had this client, and it kind of really burnt me in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on the phone with them, and
with the attorney now.
With the attorney, yeah. Right? And he goes, well, Josh, did you put this in your, in your proposal, in your engagement letter, this type of thing? And I'm like, well, I put this thing together, I sent it over to him, and no, I didn't, because I was just, I just really wasn't focused on that end of things.
Yep.
And I don't know how many times he's told me this. Is Josh, stop it.
Yeah.
He says, that relationship may look good on the front end.
It always is the honeymoon phase.
Yeah. And because it was, it was a client that was really going to be, it was going to be a good cash flow provider for us, for our firm. And boy, I tell you what, it turned out to be a disaster. And I created a lot of complications because I just tried to cut corners and do it myself.
Yep.
Instead of calling him on the front end and saying, hey, I've kind of got this new thing going on. And so now I'm like, yesterday I'm on the phone with them. I'm like, I'm sending everything over to you, fix it, clean it up. That way I don't have this happen to me again. So a lot of times in business owners, when they first start up, and even along the process, they're like so, just hung up on getting the deal, getting something done, getting something to the finish line.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, that they're not saying, okay, take a step back. Okay, am I doing things the right way? And many times we're getting lost and we're not able to see the forest through the trees. We're stuck in it. But kind of understanding that, hey, this is something that I have not done before. It's not a repeatable process that, maybe I need to pick up the phone or send out an email, shoot a text, whatever.
Anytime it's that I've never done this before, right? You're in your business and you're new. That to me should be like the red blinking light, just saying, hey, sit down with someone and have them look at this process right here. And I think so much of it goes back to my attorney said the same conversation with me 50 times. That says, well, what did you put in writing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't put it all in writing. Uh-huh. Okay, well, dummy. If it's not in writing, at the end of the day, it's a he said, she said. Mm-hmm. And that's where all this confusion, when it goes bad, really goes bad at, because there is nothing they can go back and say, well, here's this signed contract that has all this laid out into it. Because most entrepreneurs, I think, are like you, like me. We believe the good of everybody. And we want, especially your business is a consulting business. You want to help that person. Like, you have a desire to help that person grow. And on the same hand, it can also come and bite us in the butt when you're too trusting with different clients. And that's just not with consulting, that's with any client that you guys are going through the process. Okay, so you go through this. So if they're starting off, what you would say is, hey, pay attention to know what your why is at the end down here. And then number two, make sure your structure is set up the right way. Stop trying to go around it. Just get someone the right way. I would go back and like to add one more thing to it, because this is one thing I think, looking back in my career, that I wish I always would have done. And that's when I started a process. I did it on this right here. This whole money is, I did it on this, which was before I went and did it, I went and hired someone else as an outside firm to tell me, hey, look, this is where you're missing it at. This is that specialized in marketing, branding, right? Video production. And I could not tell you the amount of speed of which I started and went to here because of that thing right there. And it cost me up front. And I look back and say, now, if I wouldn't have done that, where would I be right now with all of this stuff? You know what I mean? All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk about your big clients now. You work with some awesome clients. that are already, they're not starting off, they're already in profits with commas at the end of them, right, or through them. So talk about those clients. What do you see if you're talking to some clients now that are watching, that they are making money? Maybe they did it right, wrong, indifferent, but right now, man, they're making some serious money. What do you see as a hiccup or something that messes that client up through that process?
I think two things. First of all is trying to implement tax strategy after they've already made the money.
Interesting.
Okay.
You're probably literally talking. I think as you were talking, I said, "Man, I think he's gonna start talking to me right now."
Oh no.
That one I'm good at though.
Okay.
So that one is a good one. So go hit that one. Look, give me both. Let's talk about both. Okay. So one is trying to backdate tax stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, tax strategy stuff.
Right.
After the fact. Okay. Right. That's a big one. And then what's the second one?
Okay. And then the second one is not is spending all the money and not planning for the future. So not planning what are you going to do with the money beyond just tax.
Okay.
So you talk about in the business. So everybody's like, you know, so focused on putting the money back into the business.
Yep. Reinvesting.
Maybe reinvesting. And they're not focusing on more kind of that legacy plan. Okay. Investing in the future of the business. Mm-hmm. So those are two things that we see.
When you say legacy plan, are you talking about legacy plan of the business or legacy plan of that person's personal wealth?
Both. Okay. So we're talking about both.
All right. So let's go tax strategy first. I love this stuff. I love tax strategy because it's like how I, it, to me, could be wrong here, you would know more. To me, it's the easiest way that I could sit down with a business and say, if you did the exact same thing you're doing, forget getting new clients, just do what you do, but with the right tax structure, you would save X amount of dollars. To me, it's like the easiest way to increase your profit is first make sure your tax structure is all set the right way. Am I missing something there?
No, not at all.
You don't have to gain more clients. Just make sure you're doing it the right way, right? All right, so talking about tax structure, what do you see the mistake that business owners that are now making profit, they have employees, they have customers, where's their mistake coming in at?
Well, that becomes just focusing on the profit. Okay. And so what ends up happening is that, you know, they don't want to engage us throughout the year on this, okay? They would rather talk about other things or not, you know, not engage us at all. It becomes an issue of, you know, they read something or they hear something, and we're not involved in their business.
Okay.
And so they'll tag me on a Facebook post. You know, hey, I read this. I get this all the time, right?
You get this all the time.
Yeah. And so they, you know, they'll put my name and tag me in the comment section on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I don't know about this, right? And it's like the fact that, you know what, I talked to you about this,
right?
But you thought it was too hard or it was too expensive to set up on the front end or it was whatever. You know, you had whatever excuse that you
came
wanted.
Up with
and
the time.
And then it's kind of like
justification. Yeah. They justify it, right? I do it. I justify something I can't go do, right? All right, so you get tagged in Facebook post of, oh, let me hit my accountant, CPA, on this right now. At Josh Bell.
Right. Exactly.
So you get this all the time.
Yeah, right. I get that quite often.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. And so you see this stuff on Facebook. So they're seeing something. It makes them think mid-year. Whenever they saw this post on Facebook, LinkedIn, they see it and they tag you into it, which is, are you saying that's what's making them live behind the eight ball, if you will, behind the profits, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, and can I use a real life example without mentioning names? So it happened this last week. So I had this gentleman we were talking about earlier. So he stays in his zone.
Yeah.
And we operate in different zones,
buckets.
Right? Yeah. And he knows where his niche is at. He knows, you know, what he likes doing and where he and what he does. I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't mind being in the courtroom. I prefer to stay out of it.
And he's very good.
And he's phenomenal.
I use him.
Yeah.
He's
great.
The best at it.
And I would use him.
Yep.
To represent me if I need it, right?
For sure.
And in the alternative, there's a lot of things that I do, he doesn't want it.
He doesn't want it? Okay. Yeah, I've talked about it.
Yeah. Yeah,
not interested.
And so what happened is he actually put a post on there, and so one of my clients, actually, instead of, you know, just putting my name in the comments, he actually shares it and tries to put it on my timeline.
Okay.
Like it's, you know, like just some new revelation, even though I've had a number of conversations. But the problem is that what this post talked about does not apply to him.
Okay.
Because we talked about it last year, and he decided to go a different direction because he was making his money in a way that is not congruent with the strategy that he read about.
Okay.
But we had talked about it, but at that point it was just like, well, I just don't want to do this. It's just too hard. Or in the alternative, they just say, okay, we only just want to use you for the, you know, just for the preparation side, which really can go and get done anywhere.
Right. Sure.
And okay, fine, if that's what you want. But then they say, oh, well, I read about this, or I heard about this, or you're talking about this for the future, for this next year. Can we go back and do it last year?
Right.
And it can maybe be something like retirement plans. Just simple little things that can be done. Well, no, you're past December 31st. The deadline, the cutoff on this was...
I know you're filing April 15th, but that had to be done...
That had to be done last year.
They start talking about it between, like, you know, to me, it starts happening like March 1st through like April 15th is when everybody starts to try to figure it out in business. But it's like, bro, you got to go back there.
Right.
Now you're trying to go figure this thing out, right? So you see a lot of even successful businesses still mismanaging their tax structure on in their business model. You still see them?
Sure.
And is there a difference between, for the viewers out there, is there a difference between, and I know there is, from like, I use you as my accountant to file my taxes, but there's also what's called tax planning, which is not to me the same thing, right?
And not at all.
Maybe I'm using the wrong wording there.
No.
But you have filing of the taxes, and you have tax structure, tax planning. And I think in my life where my money began to change drastically at was when I stopped focusing on tax filing and structure and focused on tax planning. How does it work? How can I get way ahead of this ball? I remember just a while back, maybe 6 months ago, I flew out to Chicago just to meet with you. And we could have did it over the phone. It's just I wanted face-to-face. And we talked about structure. And we talked about S-Corps and C-Corps, where I was. We met in the lobby of a hotel. What I was looking for, where I was, what would work for me, what would not work for me. And we were talking about the future year. Not that year. We're talking about the future year of it. And do you still see, that's interesting to me because I would think that companies that have profits normally have that stuff figured out. But when you travel and work, you still see them messing it up.
Sure.
The tax planning side.
Right, because they want to, because many times it's ego.
Okay.
They want to say, okay, the bottom line, I made X amount of dollars. Well, if you're implementing tax strategy and implementing it well, that bottom line may shrink quite a bit. But they don't have that bravado of, hey, I've got my company made $1 million last year.
Right.
Well, guess what? If you're running an active company and it makes $1 million, guess what? You're going to pay taxes on that $1 million.
But what bracket are you in?
Yeah, and it gets expensive.
Is it S-Corp? Because that's going to get expensive really quick. Right. You know what I mean? It's so interesting to me, too, the process of how people missed, and I did for years, but I missed the tax planning side. It was all about tax preparation versus tax planning. And that would be a great tagline right there, G. Are you doing tax preparation or tax planning? Because I think for me and my business, it's all based off of tax planning. The preparation side is just the filing, plugging in the numbers of what we created and built on this side of
it. It's all backwards looking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting, man. Okay, so next thing is you said that it's either tax structure that bigger companies are missing out on, or what was the other one you said?
Basically not structuring the finances in the business to really invest.
Reinvesting,
or
building
right.
up that legacy the right way.
Correct.
And we talked about there's the business side of it and there's the personal side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you the mistake that I made, and tell me this is what you see a lot of. For me, for years, all I did was ever I made, I put it right back in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean like all of it. And at some point I sort of woke up and realized, bro, if you ever stop doing this, you have nothing over here. Like I had nothing over here because all of it went back into here. And again, my shift took place when we went through the process and said, okay, pull this out. And what I noticed was it still ran over here, but my personal side exploded on this side all of a sudden. And which also gave me better clarity in making financial decisions. Because if you think about it, when I was over here and all I did was reinvest everything in my business, if I knew at the end of the day, when I lay my head down at night, if something went wrong, it all went bad. Not part of it, like my whole life went bad. And it happened to me in 2008, '07 when the market crashed.
You and a lot of people.
That was it. Right. It was like game over.
Mm-hmm.
Because for all those years, all I do is reinvest, and I never invested in myself on this side. And it was a huge mistake because even if I'd have lost everything there, if I'd have had this over here, it would never have felt as bad. Where now I look at my life and we redid it where now I'm pulling stuff out constantly. Like my main objective is what can I take out and give to me? Like I would almost say mine's opposite. And I reinvest a ton of the business, but I want to know what I can pull out. And I stuff into all these certain accounts over here, tax-based basically, into all these accounts. And it's changed my entire perspective of my entire business. And I would argue with you that I have more focus now and better focus. Maybe that's the proper word. I have better focus, more clarity on making decisions in my business because I'm not as stressed financially. Because I have it over here. I know that I do. To me, the part about money that people can't fool is you can't fool that. You can't fool yourself. You talked about the ego a while ago. You can fool a lot of people with their ego of I make $1 million in my company. But you can't, at the end of the day, the one person you cannot fool with money is yourself. You either have it or you don't have it. And you know. And you can, and I was there and I used to say, well, you know, my personal account was low and my retirement was like non-existent. But I would always justify and say, but my business is over here doing this. And you see that a lot in corporations right now, successful corporations that are out there. And there's nothing wrong with reinvesting your business. It's awesome. But you gotta pull it out for yourself too.
So when anytime that you know you're thinking about business, the one thing, and of course what we talked earlier about kind of understanding where they want to go, not just with the business but also personally, because that becomes a big part of the conversation. So the concept, first of all, paying yourself first, because I don't know how many times that a business owner will look and say, okay, my business made $1 million, but I don't know where my $1 million is at.
Yeah.
I have no idea where it went. And I've not understand
conversations, and they are miserable.
Yeah.
They're heart-wrenching. At the end of the year, you're like, well, I know I made this, but I have nothing to show for it. Like nothing. Well, what was the whole year about then? Like the whole year, all those hours, late night, what was it about? You know what I mean? All right, keep going, man.
So you're right as far as kind of structuring and setting things up in a way that we know, number one, is you as the owner, you need to be paying yourself.
Yep.
And and whether or not you're utilizing, something like Profit First or whatever, whatever it is, there's quite a few other what I'll call hacks. It's just basically just playing around with variables, right? That are out there that you can take. And but the business owner making sure that they pay themselves first. And so there's a reason that they're getting out of bed in the morning. And then what they have left, knowing what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about tax strategy, so you have that implemented, understanding that, okay, whether salary's coming out of businesses, what do they do with the salary, making sure that you're taking the money out of the right business, so you're not trying to drain, for example, money out of a passive income flow and it becomes taxed at a higher rate. I've seen this happen a lot of times. So you have all those elements in place, making sure that you're fully funding your retirement accounts in a way within your business that's going to drive down your tax exposure as much as possible if that's what you're looking to do. But all that, you're right, needs to be set up. And many times it's just not in a single business type structure. So if you're for example, many of my clients are in real estate, and many clients that you work with are as well. And there are many different types of ways that you can earn money in real estate. If you're in another type of business, okay, it may be something that real estate is something that you're using to supplement it. But all those are need to be structured in a way that is going to minimize tax, but also you're paying yourself, you're taking care of the tax strategy end, but then also understanding, okay, what do I do with what is left? Mm-hmm. And of course, tax does need to be a part of that. So you're planning for it. So you understand that, okay, this is how much I need to pay in tax. Because if you have a successful business, you are going to pay some in tax. So when you,
and that's a change.
Yeah.
Because to me, obviously everybody that I talk to in this small business, myself included, when we first started, we had one objective. Don't pay taxes.
Mm-hmm. And don't make money.
But if you do, there's a catch to that. Right. See, that means you don't make any money. Because the only way that you don't pay taxes is at the end of the year, you have to show a negative, like a loss, which means you had to spend all that you made, which means you're gonna play a deductions game, mm-hmm. right? Which means you are now spending whatever you made to not pay taxes. We were so afraid of it. We had to go spend everything to show zero here, which means at 5 years later, I still tell people, well, then you're still broke. Because 5 years later, you may have a nicer car, you may live in a nicer house, I understand all that, but you're still broke. Because you spent all that you made, mm-hmm. right? It's okay. It was a big deal in my life when I realized it's not bad if I pay taxes at the end of the year. Now, if I use all my tax strategies, all my tax planning, implemented everything to play the game the right way, I want there to be money left over. Mm-hmm. That means I was very successful that year. Not non-successful, I was extremely successful. Because for me to have profit, I first had to do all this stuff, and then there was still profit left over. I think there has to be a mind shift in people's businesses that it's okay at the end of the year to pay taxes.
And it needs to be looked at. So, and I am huge on pressing people to make sure that they have the strategies there. Minimize that. You don't want to pay a penny more.
Correct.
Then you have to.
It all goes by the tax planning first.
But whatever's left, kind of that almost becomes an element of cost of doing business.
Yes.
And it needs to be looked at it that way. And just like every other big company out there, that becomes almost essentially a cost that you're going to pass down to your customer.
It's part of it. So and my point is, where people make a mistake at, you probably see this, is there is no tax planning. Therefore, they have an insane amount over here, right? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about you plan it out a year in advance, hit every single tax planning advantage you could possibly hit. You still made a profit. Well, there's a cost of doing business of that profit, right, that you have to go pay. And I think the mistake is, it's a mental thing when it comes to money, that because they're so afraid they don't want to pay taxes, it pulls them back either in two things: growing where they should grow, and meaning profit, they should profit, and then B, they have the wrong mindset. Everything, and this is a big one to me, everything they make, they have to spend. Mm. And they get stuck in that world of just
sure.
Everything they make, they gotta spend it, which is the same thing that the employee of some random company is also, we call the rat race, right? It's the same wheel. They work a job to spend the money, Yeah, but the small business is doing the same thing. They
definitely
work the job, spend all the money. Work the job, spend all the money. You can make the argument that they're the exact same person when it comes to money. They're the same person.
Definitely.
And dude, I think when small businesses, the biggest mistake that I think looking back that I've made would be tax planning. Just not tax structure, tax planning, because it's the look ahead. And I think so many small businesses are doing it where it's April or March. Let's look back in time, figure out what we can get rid of, and do it again. Okay, let's do it next year. And it's the same thing. I would argue that my whole life financially changed when I went ahead. And I mean, like, I was like, when we met last time, it was like 8-9 months ahead of the year even starting, where I rearranged everything I was gonna go do. And from then it's keeping up with having, not me keeping up with the laws, but having somebody that keeps up with the laws, that keeps up with what's changing, what's adapting, what new strategies we can implement, because they'll change, they'll adapt, right?
I was on the phone this last week with a client actually in the south side of Chicago, east side of Chicago.
Yep.
And we were on a Zoom call, and he used this phrase, and I've heard it a number of times. He goes, "Josh, I'm a deal junkie. Help me stop it."
Yeah.
And what that means, and so many times that business owners do this,
they're addicted.
Is that, yeah, so they're, what they go through, they make profit on a deal, okay? They sell something, whatever the case may be, and instead of planning what to do with that money, immediately turn around and they buy something else. Mm-hmm. And so, and even many times we'll have a conversation ahead of time with the clients. Okay, you know what? You're going to go through. These are the things you're looking at as far as, you know, within the next few months, as far as selling deals you have coming down the pike, whatever the case may be. Now, when you sell it, okay, take this certain percentage, put it in this bucket. Take this, you know, certain percentage, put it in this bucket. But they don't. And all of a sudden they look at, oh, I've got this nut. Oh, I can buy this and I can make this.
Yep.
And it becomes a kind of discipline over desire. And so many people do this in their business life. They do this in their personal life
too. So.
They fly everything by desire, okay, versus over discipline. Like this is what I should do, and it starts even at a very in a granular level. Mm-hmm. You know, when you get your butt out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have your day planned?
Right.
And I kind of like a miracle morning concept a little bit. You know, when you get up in the morning, and people who do this in their personal lives will find that this spills over into their business life as well. So they're getting out of bed in the morning, they're eating right, they're exercising, they're getting, you know, they're spending, you know, whatever that spiritual component of their day looks like. They get that taken care of, you know, first thing in the morning, before they ever even turn their cell phone on, before they ever, you know, they're taking care of themselves first.
Yep.
Which is important. The same thing in business, making sure that business is there to basically profit yourself.
Yep.
Okay. And the legacy that you want to. In the morning, getting up, working out, whatever that looks like for that person spiritually, make sure they're eating right, and then they're ready mentally to go and do the same thing in their business. And so they're filtering everything through the discipline of, okay, I want to make sure that I am hitting these metrics as it comes to my plan, versus the desire of, I get to beat my chest because I got the next deal done. And simply, you get to the end, and then you're like, okay, well, what all did I do? Did I really make money? What did I do with this money? You know, my money's all tied up in all these other places. I can't access it. I want to do this. I can't because all my money's out there. And they failed to plan personally. They failed to plan in their business.
Two topics here that I love, and we'll wrap up with these two, but two that I love right here is, number one, for me, you talk about that person, that deal junkie, whatever. To me, and again, I'm not saying that I'm doing it the right way. I'm not saying you should follow what I do. But to me, when I realized that when I made X amount, however I got paid on certain deals, whatever it was, and we started doing that, and I just said, forget it. I knew that I needed X. I knew that how much I could max out in all my retirements. I opened up all my accounts. I've got five different types of accounts. I knew what that, added them all up, divided it out by 52. I knew what that number now was per week that I needed to be able to put inside these accounts through the process. I knew that was my retirement side. I knew what my living cost was. So I knew for me to live, I needed X divided out per week. I knew this was what I, when I went to that style right there, and then I have other accounts like the emergency account that I wanted to set up a long time ago, right? When I made money and I just started peeling some back, boom, and put it over there. And I got to the point where, uniquely enough, it was my favorite thing to do. And I had to like retrain my body. Talk about discipline over desire. My natural instinct was to go buy another house or make another investment or buy another soda shop, where instead, I had to reshift, and my favorite thing began watching all these accounts over here grow. And it was amazing. When this was happening, this ran better. I don't know why, maybe it's just me, but when I knew I had this became funner, easier. I had more energy. I wanted to do more because over here, every week I saw progress. Right. Whatever it was, I just always saw progress. And I could log in those bank accounts and every week see these grow. Literally, like week by week by week. I think that was a huge thing. And I think people in small business, myself included, miss out on. And it's all just reinvested into the business. Next thing, hit the topic of, you hit it like a magical point that I think like 90, I'm gonna make up a number here, 95% of the world misses out on, which is your morning ritual. I think right now I'm going through redoing like all this stuff in my morning ritual, because for years I would wake up in the morning, the first roll over, and the first thing I did was picked up my phone and went through to see what was going on. Mm-hmm. Like out of the gate, first thing I did. I was still in bed reading text messages, right? And what happened was, I'd go through my emails, I'd go through my text messages, whatever was coming in, and then that dictated the rest of my day.
Right.
Because then I began to chase whatever was incoming, if you will, was I gotta get up. Oh my God, let me get the shower real quick so I can get off and go fix it. Mm-hmm. And that thing began to dictate my entire life.
Yep.
And every day by day it did. It was amazing because it's a daily thing, and we're addicted to now. We open it up, we go through Facebook, we go through LinkedIn, we read some mm-hmm. stuff. We see that so-and-so passed away, and immediately we have like, my God, that's horrible. Mm-hmm. And you wake up with like negativity now. You wake up with whatever it is, and then you have the incoming messages and so forth. And majority of the time what I noticed was they were never, as a business owner at least, they were never super positive things coming in. It was always fires that I was dealing with. It was never like, very rare did I wake up one day and have a message from another customer, another business associate that wrote me out a long email that said, oh my God, you're the greatest person in the world. I love you so much. You've done so much in my life. I didn't wake up to those.
No.
Very rare did I ever wake up to that. It was always something negative, a fire, a problem, and my day was dictated by it. And so what I did was, and I'm still on the path of it, I went and bought, as I started building up my morning ritual and walked away from that in the morning, was I went and bought probably 20 planners, like life planners, focus planners. I was using one forever. I don't even mind telling you which one it was. I was using Michael Hyatt's focus planner.
That's the one I use.
That's when you use it.
It's in my bag.
Yeah, I use it. I still have it today. Mm-hmm. That's the main one that I use, that I sort of live by, yep. was that one. I just wasn't happy, not with that. I wasn't happy with my in-depth morning ritual. And yep. I started noticing The more that morning ritual was spot on, the more that I produced. It was crazy how there was a direct correlation between that morning ritual and production. So I went back and I probably bought, at this point, in the last 90 days, I've had to spend $500-$600 on planners. I just bought everything I could find my hands on, and I was looking through their morning ritual stuff. And I took a conglomerate of all of them and then built out my own morning, because all had cool stuff. Some I liked, some I didn't like, some I didn't like this piece, I liked this piece. And I built out, like, and I'm still doing it, my personal morning ritual built from all this other stuff. And dude, I'm obsessed with that right now. I'm obsessed with morning rituals right now. Do you think evening rituals, because that's the next thing my brain goes to, because I know in Hyatt's Focus Planner, there's an evening ritual too.
Right.
I haven't got into those yet. Do you do the evening side of it?
Yeah, so it really becomes a matter of, and Mondays through Fridays are usually, they look about the same every week. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about, you know, the journaling, even journaling what you eat, understanding.
It's so crazy. Yeah,
so understanding that, you know what, if I get up in the morning and I run by my local coffee shop, whatever, and grab a greasy croissant with sausage on it, I'm probably not going to function all that well.
Yeah.
For most people, at least, you know, we're starting to get a little bit older, so yeah. Our bodies don't.
You
do,
are not. Really.
So our bodies don't quite operate as well on junk food.
Yep.
Something that, you know, basically can get through a window. Mm-hmm. But getting up in the morning, understanding it, you know what, I'm worth it. You're worth it to get up in the morning, making sure that I'm eating well, mm-hmm. and so I'm eating things that help bring me energy, especially mental energy, mm-hmm. Because we expend a lot of that throughout the day. And then physically taking care of it, spiritually taking care of that side of us. And then before, as you mentioned earlier, before that phone ever gets turned on, mine, most nights, I can completely shut off now. And it stays there on the nightstand. And it's not until I'm ready to, like, pack my stuff up to head out the door that I'll even turn that thing on.
Pick it up, yeah.
And so it doesn't even get touched. Now, you talk about evening ritual, many times it looks the same way. Because many times, you know, family, right. A lot of time around, and I don't care if it's just you, or if it's, you know, if you have, you know, a spouse and children, whatever the case may be, you friends you're hanging out with, or business associates, many times that thing, you know, you it's at the dinner table, okay, and it's face up, or now, you know, that I used to call it, you just turn it upside down. But it, you know, buzzes on the counter, and immediately you're like, you know, you gotta grab it. Okay. And so many times a good evening ritual is if you get home, for example, when you get home, or back to the hotel, whatever it is, that thing gets put away.
That's the hardest for me right now. I haven't got that level yet.
And so it gets put away. Now it maybe it'll get picked up later on. And you know, for myself, I'll put it away. And then I'll pick it up a little bit later on if I'm getting back into my work, trying to get some things done a little bit later on in the evening. But I take that block of time once again in the evening to make sure that I'm eating correctly.
It's the decompress phase. Your body has to decompress. And I think that for me, I'm going to go with the morning ritual for a second. But for me, you're talking about the food thing. I was horrible at eating. And I live on the road. Like, so I speak, sure. So I literally live on the road. And it became my crutch was, well, I live on the road, so it's harder to eat, right? And I went through a process where I gained a ton of weight because every night I just order room service, right? Mm-hmm. I'm in my room. You're normally by myself or whatever, so I'd order all this food to my room. And there was some nights that I found myself, and this is bad, this is how bad it got, that I was in my room, I'd be laying in my hotel bed, and I'd wake up and there would still be like candy, like on my nightstand, because I'd eat like Reese's Pieces or something, mm-hmm. watching Netflix to go to sleep. It was really, really bad. And I switched over to, and I've only done it for a little bit now, and I have highly enjoyed it because it gave my, decompressed, it let my body, and this is the reason I love it the most, it let my body decompress. I moved over to intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's just amazing because, like, I haven't eaten yet today, and I won't eat until 1 o'clock. But that time that my body doesn't eat, so I do from 1 to 9. So I can eat from 1 o'clock to 9 o'clock, 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock, I don't eat. And it's amazing that how much better I feel like my body is doing. And I was reading on it because it gives your, if you think about it, my whole life at least, I would eat anytime I wanted to, right? 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Midnight, I would eat. Didn't matter, I would just eat. Which never gave my body, digestive system, if you want to call it this, a resting time. It always had to work. Always was working. And when I shifted gears and allowed my body to, like, rest, my actual body churning this food into energy or getting rid of it, dude, my energy level skyrocketed. Of just allowing my body to have to rest, but I wasn't allowing my body to rest because at night my body internally was still working. You know what I mean? It was a huge thing for me. Go back to the morning ritual. Without going into detail of yours, name the big points that you think are super important in your morning ritual. Without going into detail of what you do, what are the big points? You said food, meaning just watching.
I eat the same thing every morning.
Buffett does.
Yeah, I eat the same thing, and I can tell you, it's three over medium eggs and whole grain toast.
How long have you been doing it for?
I would say probably 4 or 5 years. Now, when I travel, it's not always able to be that way.
So now for morning, you eat three
over medium eggs,
whole grain toast
with some almond butter on it.
And what do you drink?
And I'll have usually about 12 ounces of milk.
Skim milk. Yep. Okay. That's what you eat every morning. And then
from there,
what's another big thing for you without going in detail?
It's working, and I lift. I'm not a cardio guy really, okay. But I enjoy lifting. So you do the weight room.
Yeah, you go to the gym. You do weights. Do you go to the gym or do it at your house?
Actually, most times I have a weight set in my garage.
At your house there. Okay, yeah. So you go out there. You'll put in some weight time.
Use about an hour.
About an hour of weightlifting. 5 days a week.
5 days a week.
5 days a week. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you got food. You got let's go back. So instead of me. Go back in order of what you do it.
Okay. So I get up.
Wake up.
The first thing is actually I'll eat, and then I'll actually, while I'm eating, usually there's a spiritual component to
so
it as well.
So you eat first thing?
Yes.
Okay, so you wake up.
Yeah, because I have epilepsy, so my blood sugar drops. I've got to eat.
So you eat first thing, and then you combine that with whatever your spiritual component is.
Exactly. So usually there's a reading element to it. Okay. And kind of a
meditation.
Little bit. Exactly. So it's usually in total silence.
You do the side by same.
They
time.
Do it usually. Yeah.
I know you're married. I know you have kids. But you're saying you do that sort of kind of alone.
It's alone.
A long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everybody in the house usually still asleep.
By the time you get up. Mm-hmm. Do you mind me asking what time you normally get up in the morning?
Usually I'm up about by 5 o'clock most every morning.
5 a.m. And that's before normally everybody else is up.
Exactly. Yes. By usually about an hour.
School
and a half,
kids, so, they're not waking up at 5 a.m. Right. Right. So normally you're the first one up, you go through this process around 5 a.m., you eat alone, do your spiritual meditation process at the same time, then what do you do?
Then I'll lift at that point.
Back up, I'm gonna get detailed with you. How long is that eating spiritual time right there?
Usually it's 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay, 30 mm-hmm. to 45 minutes there. You do some reading, I think you said
yes.
that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, then you go weights mm-hmm. At your house. You go lift weights for about an hour or mm-hmm. so, okay? Then next component.
Showering.
Okay.
That's a must. That's a good idea. I don't want to go into the office.
Yeah. So then you go
showering, and then it's off of my day.
And then you take off. So your three big categories there are what you eat, the spiritual side of it, and then the physical side of it.
Right.
Those are your big things right there. One thing that I'm looking at inside of, as I build out mine, is a pretty big vitamin regimen.
Vitamins are, I take a handful of them every morning.
You do? Yeah. Okay, that's what I asked you. So you do a big vitamin regimen in the morning as well. That was a big one I was adding into it. And a huge one that I added into it that I was horrible at was water intake.
Oh, yeah.
I was horrible at water.
I've been taking a lot of that while I work out.
Yeah, you drink constantly.
Yeah, two big huge tanks of water.
And uniquely enough, the more that I track it in my planner, so I sort of, this is weird. I like things custom. Everything I have is custom right now. And it's just how I like it. I know if it's mine and it's built for me, it's like exactly what I want. I paid a guy to build out my own planners for me. So I took all of these planners and it took what I loved from it, but it's certain things I didn't like, right? And I just built my own planner. And I noticed that as I built my morning ritual out, when I wrote down, I even got to the point where I would try to write down what I was gonna eat for lunch and for dinner. Meaning, cause I lived at the point where I was just running around and when my body got hungry, I would say, oh, there's a McDonald's, let's stop there. Meaning, it controlled me versus me controlling it. You know what I mean? And when I at least would take the time in the morning to say, okay, what do I want to eat for lunch? And I would sort of write down, and I live on the road a lot, which means I eat a lot, but that means I would actually try to name the restaurant that I wanted to go to. It put me in control of everything in my life. I loved it, man. When I took it back, I felt like nothing, that part of my world was owned by that, and now it's owned by me. It was a big deal, man. So when you hit morning ritual, that was a huge point. And I think a lot of people skip over and addicted to this thing right here. Great, great info, Josh. Let me wrap it up with this right here. Money is. So all this wraps down to one big word. We talk about money and business. money and all of these businesses that we do that you see, correct me if I'm wrong here, the one thing they all have in common is they all want to make money. It's not a secret. You know what I mean? Like, again, it goes back to almost people don't want to talk about it. But the reason that I do this, the reason that I go speak, the reason that I do my old was really one thing. I was trying to make money. Now, what I did with it is where we all get different at, right? What we do with it once we have it. But money means different things to different people. The whole concept here is money is blank, meaning money means different things to different people. In your life, what does money mean to you? The one word, what does that one word mean to you?
Money is a tool.
Cool.
I'll just use it as a tool. And in, whether it's in my life or in somebody else's, is a tool basically to reach fulfillment. Okay. And so, and like I said, like we've talked about, it's different things for different people. Some people find fulfillment in maybe in certain possessions or whatever the case may be. I think for most people, and I know for myself, the fulfillment comes through helping others. But you're not able to help others. It requires a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But money is a huge element, is a key tool a lot of times in being able to help others get to where they need to be. Whether it's feeding children, I think you said in Honduras earlier.
Honduras, yeah.
Okay, so it requires people, but it definitely requires money.
Yeah.
And nothing will get funded. No mission, whether it's you have a personal mission, or you have a corporate mission, it'll never get to where it needs to be, unless it has the tool of money and that resource.
Money makes it go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and always, I was doing a video a while back and I said, when it comes to missions, like whatever project you want to get focused on, whether it be clean water or feeding people or creating orphans, whatever it is, to me it always seems like it's never a matter of there's not people that will go do it. Meaning, when I went down to feed the children of Honduras, understand, there were people there that were literally had moved their lives to be here,
right,
to go do the process. They were lacking one thing. Not people, they were lacking money.
Right.
That was it. And when the money showed up, boom, food was delivered. It was like they got to the point where they had it all there. To me, it's never a lack of people, it's always lack of money. And the more money, the more that we can understand the game of money, the more we know about money, the more that we can use money. This year for me, money is giving. That's the one word I chose, was money is giving. But probably my favorite word is that right there. I always say it in classes I teach, money is nothing but a tool. It can be used for bad or it can be used for good. People that have money can use it for bad or they can use it for good. It's just a matter of how you use that tool, right? Think about any type of tool out there, right? Mechanics have them, contractors have them, and they can be used one or two different ways. Money is a tool.
And like every tool, some people know how to use it. Some people don't. And unfortunately, most people have not studied. It's almost like going to a trade school.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not a hands-on guy by any stretch of the imagination. So if I were to walk into a machine shop, and my dad was a machinist when he was younger for years, and I'd go to his work and I'd look around. I have no idea how to operate those things. They were tools. They were powerful. They generated a ton of energy.
Produced at a high level.
But I had no idea how to operate them.
Right. And worthless to you.
Right. And so for most people, they get this tool of money and they have no idea what to do with it.
They never studied it.
Yeah.
They never take the time to understand the game of money, what it does, how it works, how it operates, how to keep it, how to make it, how to grow it, how to give it. I always talk about I always talk about money as a language. It's a foreign language. And it'd be like, you know, again, if you started speaking Chinese right now, or I did to you, and you don't speak it, it's irrelevant. You have no idea what I'm saying right now. I could be giving you the greatest advice in the world, it's irrelevant to you. And I think money's a language that people just don't understand how that language operates, the nuances of that language. The more you understand it, the more you can do with it. The less you understand it, the less you'll do with it.
It's not just the understanding, but also the implementation.
Yep.
Because a lot of people, they'll listen to you speak, they'll listen to myself speak. Oh, that sounds great. But they fail on the implementation. So just like every tool, I can buy the tool,
right?
But then I have to understand, okay, how do I implement? How do I take this tool and use it?
Yep. This is Josh Belk with Belk & Associates. Josh, real quick, what is your podcast? I know you started a podcast recently.
Yeah, I started a few months ago. It's the Belk on Business podcast. Okay. You can find it on all the platforms out there.
Belk on Business.
Belk on Business.
You go through business. Your podcasts are maybe, I've seen them, I watch them.
Yeah, they're usually 7, 8, 9 minutes, a piece. Yeah.
7 to 10 minutes a piece.
Yeah.
It's you on them. You give real life business advice in business to them. How often do you do those?
They're out weekly. Usually we publish those out every Monday. So
every Monday you do a new one basically right now? Okay. Yeah. You got a weekly podcast called Belk on Business. Seven to 10 minutes of just practical business knowledge that people can use from you. And of course, you're using them from my accounts at my CPA. That's Tim Belk and Associates. Appreciate it, Josh.
Thank you.
For coming back.
Pleasure to be here.